This morning I want to talk about something that was slightly related to a lesson that I've done in the past. In the past I had done a lesson on links and chains and how we are connected to God through Christ and how people that follow after us are connected to us as well. But I want to look at the same type of theme again today a little bit differently. Just as our protocol is, it seems like we give these simple definitions when we start these lessons out, but sometimes they are a good refresher for us to look at. We're going to be talking about connections today, and you'll see in just a moment how we'll be talking about connections. But connections are certainly that are very important to all of us. They're important to our family, they're important to us as individuals, they're important to us as workers and moms, dads, children, whatever the case may be for our relationship to somebody else. The definition, I believe this was on Google's own dictionary, and they defined this as a relationship in which a person, thing, or idea is linked or associated with something else. And so while we're not going to be talking about that specific situation, I did want to start off by looking at some things that connections are important to us. First of all, we may have a connection to a person. What is my connection to Glendon or Edith? Or what is your connection with somebody that you work with or know or have as a friendship? Your connection could be simply, well, we work together, or we know each other, or we used to live together, or we used to live next door to each other. We grew up together. We went to the same school. All those things are the connections or the little fibers that connect us to other people and help them to know us and helps them to know helps us to know them as well. Part of those connections are important because you may at some time be an encouragement or a discouragement to them by the behavior that you have or that I have and the things that we do and go through life. Another connection, we may have a connection to a place. I was fortunate to be born in Colorado Springs. I try to bring that up as often as I can. I don't claim to be a Buckeye or an Ohioan, especially when we're all dealing with allergies. So when people talk about going to Colorado or being in Colorado, I say, well, that's my home. That's where I was born. And so I'm very fond of that place. I love mountains. I love that part of the country, and it's just a special place to me. So my connection to Colorado is by birth. You may have connections to other places. I know Glennon and Edith have connections to Kentucky and places like that. Others of you may have places here in the U.S. or, in Brio's case, around the world. So we have these connections because of birth or family or whatever the case may be. So we're talking about person, place. What about a thing? What types of things do we have connections with? Well, you know, you see some people and they typically have something with them all the time. When I was younger, it may be people tend to have a Walkman or a radio. These days, we have a lot of connections in kind of multiple ways with our phones. We tend to have our phones, and some of us have trouble looking up from our phones. Others of us just pretty much ignore them as much as possible. But we have connection with things. It may be with my connection. I love railroad history. I've been very involved with the Jeffersonville area and trying to get a station up there. So when people ask me, what's your connection with Jeffersonville? Well, I can tell them, I'm interested in trying to get a station rebuilt there. And so that's my connection. But all of you have something like that in a place or a thing or any other place that we might be talking about. Another thing that you might be talking about there is a tether. Thanks, Ted. We may be, as far as connections go, I was thinking in some situations, you may be required to have a tether between you and other people. What is a tether? Somebody says, well, it's basically like a rope. You think of somebody being tethered together, I always think of people rock climbing. And I've watched several shows lately that have had people doing free-based climbing, which they basically climb up loose, and the only thing that they're connected with is the person behind them or the people behind them. They don't hook themselves to the things that are hammered into the rock and so on. They do this in a very dangerous way, but it's a way that they really like doing. So that connection can be both a help to them, but it can also be a detriment. If that person falls and you're not fastened to something, by being connected to them, you're going to go with them. But if you're secure in your situation, you may be the person that saves them too. So just important things for us to think about. What about our connections and relationships? How do you factor in there? Pam may be a mom. Pam may be a grandmother. Pam may be a sister. She's all those things, right? And all of us kind of have different connections to people in our relationships. I'm a son. I'm a dad. I'm a brother. And all those things. I'm an uncle. And so on. So those are connections to each individual. Every person changes that relationship and changes those connections. So today we're going to be talking about, as I've done in the past, we're going to start off looking at very physical things, and most of the lesson is about these physical connections. But then I want you to take away from all those things that we're going to talk about and think about them spiritually. Electrical connections. Some questions I'm going to ask you here, and then we'll get started. I want you all to look at the lights that are up there. I know when we were building this building, one of the first things that was suggested is we go LED lights in this building. And these lights are a little bit different than most lights, but it could be at your house, a little lamp with a regular incandescent bulb, or maybe in your kitchen you have a fluorescent bulb. Even the light on the screen behind me is being projected from that camera, or the TV here and here. Yeah, light's being produced from inside the device. How does that light near you work? It doesn't just come on. Somewhere there's a reason for that working. That wall behind me, or that wall back there, or this podium right here, is not what is making this light work. Something else is causing that to happen. I think we know what that is, but let's just think about that. How can we turn it on? If a kid goes up to a light and says, you know, I've known since I was a little kid that if I pull this switch or I twist this knob or flip that button, that light's going to come on. But what's really happening right there? Why is that light coming on? How is that possible? Well, mom and dad or grandpa may say, well, that's coming from a power station and it comes here to this building or to our house, and that's where the electricity comes from, and the electricity is what makes that work. Well, the next question they may ask you, or we ask ourselves, where does that power come from? I think some of us know these things, but it's a good thing to kind of consider. And first of all, how does it get there? I know that there's a power station in faraway places, Cincinnati, Dayton, Cleveland, Columbus. Some of them have multiple places where power is generated. But how does that reach us here today in Waynesville or Corwin proper? We've got a grid here, and I've taken this. I'll show you the link at the end there. But there's a number of places that we get our electricity. From left to right on the screen behind me, you can see how the power reaches this building or how the power reaches your home or business. So let's look at this. I'll just follow along with this guide. And it says electricity is made at a generating station by huge generators. Generating stations can use wind, coal, natural gas, or water. Can even use a petroleum, as we'll see here in just a moment. So it could be all those things. If you've been fortunate to go to northern Ohio and maybe out west, you've probably seen these giant wind turbines that create electricity. You may be going to places that have these solar arrays. I know Yellow Springs has got a pretty significant solar array they put in for the Antioch College some years ago. It's about 10 acres of nothing but mirrors that adjust and pull in the sun and create power. We know that many factories you get around the Ohio River, just outside Gallipolis, there's a big coal station that's got those big smokestacks that you can see smoke rising from it, and many other places. But there are the places that are generating the electricity. Next on our stop, so we've got the power being generated, what happens next? It says the current is sent through transformers to increase the voltage to produce or push the power long distances. So those generators are making all this electricity, it goes out into these transformers, and it's actually increased in voltage, as you can see in that graph there. Next, the electrical charge goes through high voltage transmission lines that stretch across the country, and we've probably all seen these. I'm going to show you a map in just a moment. It's going to show how we get our power here from Dayton. And just looking at some of the things that I saw on the map as I was coming in, I'm paying attention to where these lines are. They're very important for us to get this power and how they work. But we've all seen these. Some of these big towers are those old metal ones that are all aluminum or steel looking you've seen. Remember a few years ago up north of Waynesville, they put those real skinny towers in. Some of them are very rusty, but they put all those lines in there. And they put those cables on there. Some of the transmission lines, I believe, are actually silver, or primarily silver and nickel, just to have very good conductivity. Continuing on, next stage we've got, it reaches a substation where the voltage is lowered so it can be sent on smaller power lines. One thing I was going to do is look at the comparison when Tesla was battling, I forget his name there, all of a sudden now, I keep wanting to say Alexander Graham Bell, but that's not who it was. But there was a constant argument about the best way to send power and electricity from place to place. Edison is who I'm thinking of. So Edison had his view of it, and Tesla had his view of it. They were partners, but they disagreed on how power should be sent. Edison felt like we should use direct electricity, so he raised very high voltage of electricity. And when towns were starting to have light bulbs and electricity and things like that, the voltage was very high. And anywhere you went, that voltage could be touched and electrocute you. I believe it was Tesla that said, no, let's raise the power very high, but before it gets to stations, let's bring the power back down so it can reach these long distances. I wanted to get into that, but it was too much of a conversation, and I may be butchering it up a little bit, so you might want to look into that. But in this situation, it says the power does reach the substations where the voltage is lowered so it can be sent on to smaller power lines. And you notice that when you get to your house or your business, the telephone poles that are outside of there are much smaller than the ones you see in the country when you're driving around. Next, it says it travels through the distribution lines to your neighborhood. Smaller transformers reduce the voltage again to make the power safe for us to use in our homes. And we can see this. We'll continue on and looking at some things in just a moment. These smaller transformers may be mounted on the poles. If you people have ever looked up on a telephone pole and you've seen those cylinders that are grayish, kind of silver looking, that's a transformer. It's actually taking the power from up above on the power line, bringing it into there, and then bringing it down to a lower level. And then you typically see a line running either aerial drop from that power line to your house or business, or you see it come down the telephone pole and then it runs into the ground and goes to your house. So the other option that you have, if maybe you have a neighborhood that has buried electrical lines, you may have a house that's got those big green boxes out in front of it. The house that my mom and dad have has one of those, and maybe you do as well. But that is also a place where that high voltage is being dropped down to a lower voltage. And as they point out there, those are big green boxes called pad mount or transformers. So next stop, we've gone through steps 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Now we're at our house. So we've come down from the pole, or we've come down from the box in our front yard. And it connects to your house and passes through a meter that measures how much your family uses. That's what you're charged for. When the electric company, if they're doing their job properly, when they charge you your monthly bill, what they charge you is what that meter says. So you remember the old meters would spin around and then they had what looked like an odometer. It would click, and then based on what your amperage usage was or your volt use was for the month, that's what they would charge that on. And now there was a day, remember, when I think maybe some of you maybe were or knew people that were meter readers. They actually had a job to go from house to house or business to business to see, okay, what did it say last month and what does it say today? Well, this is what the number is, so I'm going to have to charge these people this amount. Most of these are all automated now, so the electric companies, the phone companies can know what your usage is even from not being at your house. So very interesting things have changed. So now we're inside of our house. The meter's measuring what's coming to our house and what we're using. The electricity goes to a service panel in your basement or garage where breakers or fuses protect the wires inside your house from being overloaded. And this is a pretty bad example of what these look like, but you probably know if you've ever been in your house or your business, there's some big panel that's usually silver. You open it up. The old houses used to have these things that you screwed in there. Those were fuses. They would get too much power, and then it would just snap. They would just pop, and they would not let any more electricity go through until you figured out what was causing that problem. As we're talking about connections, sometimes those connections are faulty, and that causes them to fail. Modern houses have circuit breakers. So if the power gets too high for some reason, the switch will just snap from one side to the other, letting you know there's a problem here. There's a fault somewhere in my connection. So you want to get that checked out. But it keeps your house being safe as possible. Next step, the electricity travels through the wires inside of our walls, the outlets and switches all over our house. So if we're talking about Waynesville right now, and I'm talking about what you see behind me, that's coming from that projector up there, but inside the attic there's electric lines that go back to our transformer or to our switch box, which is back in the utility room. It goes from there down in the ground and then out to where the electricity comes into our property, certainly through the meter and all the way back in time. So we'll look at that in just a moment. I want you to be thinking about these connections because these are going to play a part in the spiritual application for today. So, question for you now. How can you hear me over this microphone? We have a microphone right here. We've kind of relocated it, not putting it on our lapel or on our shirt, as we had done in the past because of our safety measures. But how can you hear me over this microphone right now? Where is the electricity coming from that you hear me? And how does it get here? So we know how it normally gets into a house or business, but how does it get here into Waynesville? How does it get here to Corwin? I'll show you. At the very end of this, I'll have a link for you if you're interested in seeing that. But on that map there, you should see a very bright green dot right in the middle. It's right above where it says Wayne Township. If you look on our map, that is an interactive map for the U.S. Energy Mapping Service. And it shows how the power grid in different areas is set up. So I want to show you how we get our power right here. So first of all, that's where we're at. If you see that black line that kind of jots around there, it kind of goes down and around and then back below us, that is the main transformer line that you can see. And I saw this morning when I came in on 73, just before you went through the little dip there on the way over here. So we zoom in a little bit. It says our building is fed from nearby 345 kV lines. That's 345,000 volts. Those big tall towers are that high of voltage. So if you're never sure exactly how much voltage, how much that voltage can do, you should check it out and see. I'm not sure how well you can see that there, but it talks about the owner of the line that reaches us is from Dayton Power and Light. It's a substation is in Sugar Creek. It has details about the line and gives you details about where that's at. So the line that you see there in the bright green is not what is coming from those big, big towers down the street, but those are branched off and then they're fed mostly either underground, or I think if you go out here by the Furnace Forge community, you can also see these smaller lines coming over here. So that's where our power starts off from. So before I showed you how power goes from the station that creates the electricity to your final home, now we're going to go backwards. So we're going from our building right here back to its source. Next up, again, follow the bright green line. You can still see us down there in the bottom on the left-hand side. These power lines run north once you get to east of Spring Valley Marsh, if you know where that's at. So you see Route 42 heading up towards Xenia, and you see that bright green line going right through that. If you went driving down US 42, you would also drive underneath those high tension wires. Continuing on, these lines continue to run north between Spring Valley and Bellbrook, Ohio. And you can see where I've tried to mark there. Bellbrook is on the upper left, marked in green. Spring Valley is marked there and just off of 42 on the right-hand side, and then showing Spring Valley Township. So again, those lines are kind of intersecting these major areas. And it's intentional that they did that. They want those high power lines to divide communities so that when they branch off and provide the electricity to them, it's very easy to do that. Continuing on. They continue to run north near Dayton Xenia Road, just west of the Little Miami River. So you can see where they run up just over, just north of US 35 and to Beaver Creek Township there. And that's where those lines make their way back towards Dayton. Now they do continue on. They're branched off there. And you probably have ever, if you've ever been around that area, you may have seen all those lines going in different directions because they serve other communities. At that same area, there is a power line connection substation where they increase in power as they head to the source of the energy. Now again, because I'm going backwards, they're increasing in power. Remember when I showed you the diagram earlier, the power is reduced as it makes it way our way to us. So this shows where the substation is there in the Beaver Creek area heading back towards Dayton. Thank you. If you drive on US 35, as you head into Dayton, you can look north and see the high tension wires that are just north of the bike path until you get to the Dayton Corp limit. I've seen these for years, knowing that area. You probably have too. If you turn by where the old Lafino's is there on just in Beaver Creek, you're just south of Dayton Xenia Road and just south of the old railroad tracks, which is now a bike path. If you look north there, you should see those high gray high tension wires as you drive along the US 35 back towards Dayton. And you can see that termination up there in the top left is where those power lines go back to. A little closer view, it says finally the power lines head to Dayton Power and Light buildings where the electricity is produced using petroleum for fuel. And so there's, if you look at there, it shows that it's a station of one of three. So Dayton has three generators that are producing electricity in that area. And we've probably all been familiar with that. So now that we know how lights get power, and we know how we get power to our church building, or how we trace that power here, can these connections break? That's a very important thing. And when you're talking about electricity, that is a huge problem. A loose connection, a broken connection, or a connection that's faulty have extremely high risk. Why is that? Well, we'll take a look at it in just a second, and we'll look at what causes them to break. So first of all, worst thing probably for power lines is trees. Trees get close, they grow and they grow, and we've seen some, I wanted to put some pictures here of just some ridiculous ways that people have actually trimmed these trees. You see trees growing up to these high tension lines. When they get, a lot of times you'll see what the state and counties will do. They'll let the trees grow up over the phone lines, and they'll grow up over the cable lines and the lines towards the bottom. But as you get to the top of the pole, that's where the high power is, or where the power lines are. They don't ever want the lines to get touched by trees there, because that power will jump straight from the tree or whatever that whatever may be touching it, trying to reach back to the ground. So you may see a power line going, and you see these trees that have been cut over the years where the tree surrounds the power line, but there's this huge gap where they trim them out. Some of them are really sad. But why is this happening? Why does that tree catch fire? Why is there big power surges there? Well, in order to have power work, you need to have where it starts, or the positive power, and then as that power is grounded or taken to a neutral, that's what makes the power work. That's how all of our electronic devices function. That's how motors function. And in this case, this tree is putting itself in place of the actual use of electricity by just taking all that power and sending it down to the ground, because it is in the ground. Probably too straightforward. When you say something's grounded, that means it's actually in the ground. So not a complex notion there. Something else that can happen. Remember, we said as the power lines go down and they're getting close to our house, the next thing that we need to have is the power needs to reach our meter boxes. And that's where they measure how much energy we're using. It's also where the power enters our home or business. Well, if we have a bad connection, you might see a situation like this, where the meter is normally on top and the bottom is normally closed, so you can't see all that, but there was a bad connection there. Could have been anything. This picture may have been a result of lightning, or just a bad ground, or a loose connection. But something definitely caused it to catch fire. Something was not connected properly, and it caused that. So sometimes when power reaches a home or business, the meter's connections are not good. It could be something past this or something in front of it. Another thing, we've got the power to the house. The meter's good. The power lines are good. But now it's in our basement, or it's in our utility room, and there's a problem here. So the meter may be fine, but once the power reaches the fuse box or the circuit breaker box, there can be connection issues even there. You've probably seen this. I've seen it in my home. You've probably seen it in your home. Sometimes, even as well as circuit breaker boxes or fuse boxes are put together, at some point somebody didn't touch a screw right and that power line will just pop out of there. Well, most circuit breaker boxes and fuse boxes are made of metal. So if you have an electrical connection that is positively charged, pop out of place and touch the box, it's going to cause a lot of problems for everything else, and could potentially burn your home down. All right, so we've made it past the power lines. We've made it to our meter. We've made it past our breaker box. Now what's another problem? Well, another thing could be the fuse box, or the issue is actually a faulty outlet, or just the way that it plugs in there. So many times I've seen people have problems with power switches and electrical outlets that just don't seem to work consistently. Sometimes it's just something that's, again, has gotten loose over time that we've just ignored or we didn't know about. A lot of times this happens in a new home. Okay, well, what if it's something not there? We're talking about connections. All those other connections are good. What else could it be? The outlet's fine. The breaker box is fine. The meter's fine. The electric lines are fine. Well, sometimes it's these types of situations. More often, the issue with a bad connection is an overused, a worn, or broken cord. This, too, can cause a connection failure, which is worse. These kind of things, I think probably most of us have got a vacuum cleaner or two that we have a cord that looks like this. We've typically got them taped up because it's like, as vacuum cleaners tend to have long cords, we sometimes run over them, and those brushes scrape the top off the line and make a problem for it. Maybe we ignore them for a long time. We've also got people that have orange extension cords in their garages that they use for power tools. We know that there's problems with them, and a lot of us have those things taped up. We tape them up because we don't want that connection to be a failure. But in this case, as you remember, with most electrical cords, you have a positive, a negative, and a ground. That ground can pull the electricity from either of the other two lines as it's going through there. So, what does all this talk of electric grids, power devices, have to do with the Sunday lesson? We've talked about where the power comes from, and we've talked about it getting to our homes. And here's what I've got for you. Some passages to think about, and the familiar passages, but again, I want to be thoughtful about our relationship, our connection. Just as we talked about a relationship to a mom or dad or sister or brother, our relationship and connection with God. In Matthew 6:33 says, "But seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you." talking about the situation. Well, what about people that aren't clothed or aren't fed well? That's the starting point, but all things spiritual are very important there. But it all goes back to God. God is the source of all power. God is the source of all things. And everything that we could want or hope to achieve or hope to have, including our eternal home with Him in heaven, starts there. So in order for our house to work properly, our body, or as the New Testament talks about, our body is a temple. If it's working properly, all those connections that we've described on electrical things go back to the source without interruption. And that's how we want it to be with our relationship to God. So first of all, we talk about God. Next, as we pointed out in point two of our earlier talks, Jeremiah 32:17 says, "Ah, Lord God, behold, you have made the heavens and the earth by your great power and outstretched arm. There is nothing too hard for you." Why do we want to be connected back to God? It's for this exact reason. We know without God, we can't do anything. He makes His ultimate power, even as the Bible talks about, that people couldn't even see God's face because it was too great. It was too impressive for them to behold. The closest anyone ever got is some of that which was described to Moses, being able to see the image of God. But in this case, as we've talked about with the power here, God is bringing His great power and making it magnified and making it focused towards us. Continuing on, verse we've talked about many times, I think Cody talked about this past week, I believe it was in a lesson even before that. In Matthew 28:18-20, we've talked about this so many times, "Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things that I have commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Amen." All right, notice that part, "teaching them to observe all things that I have commanded you." Over and over, Christ said, "I am doing the will of my Father." If you want to know what God is, or who God is, or what His plan is for you, just look at me. I'm doing exactly what He wants me to do. And so as we point to the power station there, to those transformer lines, those high power lines there, Christ is that conduction. He's that transforming agent, taking the power of God, the majesty of God, and moving it along. But He's also saying, I need you to be part of this too. Power lines get smaller and smaller as they go, but they maintain a very high level of energy. And that's exactly what Christ wanted for His disciples, His apostles, and they want from us as well. So we see that for point three. Point four, when we talked about the substation, Ephesians 4:16 says, "From whom the whole body, joined and knit together from what every joint supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share, causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love." So again, this verse may not seem to have application when we're talking about electrical grid, but it does. Everything that I need electrically comes from being from a substation like this. That high power is reduced down to where I could use it. I can use it at my job for my computer. I can use it here to be on the microphone or for have the screens for you or have lights here for you. We can use it for so many things, our mobile devices to recharge, the kids to be able to go to school and when they are able to go to school again. So all these things can work out. But every joint supplies according to the effective working by which every part does its share. Continuing on, we get into the smaller lines, there are smaller cables that are bringing power to our houses. How are those connections related there? 2 Timothy 4:2, Timothy is being spoken to by Paul, and he says, "Preach the word. Be ready in season and out of season. Convince, rebuke, exhort with all long-suffering and teaching." So remember, what does God have? What does Christ have? What did He tell His apostles? And what does His apostles pass on to us? These connections are all interconnected electrically. These are the connections that we should be thinking of metaphorically for us as Christians. We need to be able to carry on what Christ and the apostles started off with and what God asked Christ to carry on. So how do we think about these spiritual applications with a meter? Matthew 5:29 says, "If your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you, for it is more profitable for you than one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast in hell." How does that apply to a meter? Why are we talking about that? Well, because there's a buffer here. A meter, as we showed before, it can be burned up, but it was also a way to make sure that the high power from outside your home or business doesn't get into your home or business if it's out of control. And what is being spoken to here in Matthew 5:29, saying, if there is a bad connection at all, get rid of that bad connection. Because we need to make sure that when it enters you or your whole home or business, or even our temple as we think of it, it's better for that to be safe when it finally gets there than to have a problem with it. And we talked about the box in our home where we have the power. Think about this for Hebrews 13:17. Obey those who rule over you and be submissive, for they watch out for your souls, as those who must give account. Let them do so with joy and not with grief, for that would be unprofitable for you. Specifically looking at the idea or the role of an elder or a bishop or the leader that is in the church when we have all those offices filled, but even in the case of an elder brother or sister in Christ, somebody that is doing what they're supposed to, they're watching out for you because of what they've gone through, and we should be doing the same for those around us. Just like a meter box, the same thing as I described earlier. If you are being submissive, our power is submissive to our circuit box. It doesn't matter what we're doing. If there's a fire in an outlet right there, or there's a mixer at home that's going crazy, all we have to do is flip a switch on our power grid or on our switch box, and that will stop. There is no further use for it. And that's kind of the same way here. Are we making sure that our connections between us and Christ and those that are around us are solid and good? So finally, our home. John 14:23 says, Jesus answered and said to them, if anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him. This has been used in a number of lessons that have been presented lately, but just, it's so great. And it's, especially when I'm trying to tell you about this image that you see here. The power plant on the far end is ultimate power. It's ultimate God. But on the very end, there's a small home for me. It's where I live. And John 14:23, Jesus said, God and myself will make our home with you. But in order for that to happen, what I don't have listed there, that connection has got to be solid all the way back. If it's broken at any point here, there's not going to be a good connection. So some questions as we wrap up today. How are your connections spiritually? We talked about a number of different things. Trying to get back to God, trying to get back to Christ, trying to get to the Word of Christ and God in the Bible. How are connections there? Do we have these loose connections that work on Sunday and Wednesday, and we only have that power just for a moment? Or are we staying connected to it during the rest of the week? I put this up there again to kind of give you an analogy there. God being the ultimate source of power, Christ being the conduit of that power reaching from God to man, then there's us. Maybe that's where we stop. We say that's all the connection that there is, but it's not true. We are in the middle of all this. We affect our family. We affect our church. We affect the world. When the scripture talks about us being as a city sit on a hillside or a lamp drawing people to it, we are the ones that we become the conductor, or we become the transformer that Christ is sending to us. If the world and the church and our family does not see Christ in us, we are disconnected. We have not been connected properly with Christ or those people. We have to be connected to both in order for things to work properly. Without you in place, the connection is broken. And I think that's probably the most important thing that I want you to think about today. We certainly want to be connected to Christ. We certainly want to be connected to God. But we can't forget the fact that we need to be connected to those around us. And then I just had some references for some of the things that I used today. That's all that I had for you today, but more science probably than it was spiritual. But I really felt compelled to bring this up as it's important for us. Electricity can be one of the most deadly things there is when it's gone wrong. So many times I've heard stories about swimming pools that have had power issues and people being electrocuted. I've heard about people being electrocuted at home. I know looking at houses right now, one of the biggest things that they look at is the electrical system. And do they have GFI safety devices in the bathrooms and in the kitchens because there's water around those things? Is somebody using a hairdryer and they drop it in the sink or in the bathtub? Is that going to be something that's going to kill them, or will that ground fault automatically be stopped and protect them? It's that safety device there. That electricity is all around us. It makes our lives great, but it can also make our lives very, very painful or even kill us. And so it's very important when we think about the spiritual application of these connections that we remember if we distance ourselves or we have a loose or even partial connection with God, we will not be the people that we should be. The same thing is true with Christ. If we believe in God, but we aren't doing what Christ has asked us to, or has asked through the apostles and the text of the New Testament, we have a loose connection. And that's a dangerous situation. And all of the connections that we have, if they're loose or bad, we've probably all heard the term brownouts. Or when you have a brownout, sometimes that's when the electricity drops to such a level that everything kind of dims down. Is that what's going on in your life? Is everything in it connected but only partially? Are you browning down? Have you lost the brightness that you should have? And it's only very important for us to remember that we've got to maintain that brightness for our own sake and for the sake of others around us. So this morning, I want you to think about your connections to God, to Christ, to the church, to your family, to the people around you, and make sure that you're safely connected. And if you're not, we invite you to bring those needs forward as we stand and sing the song of invitation.